Hello, welcome to the F1 show. We're here to try and do a bit of a catch-up on where we've been. We haven't been around for four Grand Prix. Do apologise. Joining us, my esteemed colleagues. Top left, Tony Blunt. How you doing, mate?
All right, thanks. And you?
Excellent. I'm rough. I'm feeling rougher by the minute as we go, so we'll keep it short. Next to him, we've got Chris. How you doing, pal?
Hello, mate.
Finally back. We may not have been here for four races, but you ain't been here for about 10.
Oh, don't. I feel so rusty.
Yeah, so you should.
So I'm having a beer to get into the swing of it.
Good man.
Something to do with the Olympics, I believe.
Mm. Yes, I was speeding around the Olympic Park. I was actually speeding around the Olympic Park.
No, that
Park.
Bit you like, I got a ticket. That bit you got license for it's the last few weeks.
Yeah, oh well I was that. I've just been really, really busy.
Good.
Like
man.
Like you, Ewan.
I am.
Except you're busy all the time. And
that's
I'm
true.
Just busy onto you.
And last but my name is Lise. Ms. Gray, how you doing?
Very well, thank you. Pleased to be here.
The year in F1.
Year in F1.
Let's recap.
Kimi Raikkonen finally got pissed. Not Kimi Raikkonen, sorry. Nico Rosberg finally got pissed off with Carter Kane and decided to hump him. That was last time.
I thought that was his
spot. You didn't miss it. Was it? No. And we're off to Austin, Texas. We've had a bit of a mixed bag, really, I suppose. We've missed you since Singapore. I hate Singapore. I think it's a shite track. Japan was fairly mundane. Korea was possibly the most boring Grand Prix I've ever seen in my entire life. India wasn't particularly better. And Abu Dhabi, finally, Kimi Raikkonen managed to mount the platform and looked like a real contender for a while there. But it's been Vettel. Raikkonen. Were those predictable results? Are Red Bull on the way back in, or are we going to see a surge from the others yet for the end of the season?
It's very much looking like it's Vettel's to lose now. You know, when
really, you've
from,
written a lot
when he,
start,
when he starts from the back of the grid and he still managed to finish on the podium, that kind of says that Alonso's really
well.
Not
pit lane,
chance.
Be fair.
Well, yeah, even pit lane, even yeah. better. You know,
I mean, he was lucky. He was very lucky.
Yeah, but he seems to have a lot lucky.
He was. I mean, he rode his luck and he raced, which was, you know, everyone's always said he's not a racer, but he raced that Grand Prix. There's no question that Abu Dhabi, he was challenging to get where he wanted
to. It's not been the first time he's done that either, is it? Yeah, really.
He was lucky because of the safety cars. He wouldn't have got that far up the grid, up the order, if it hadn't been for the safety cars. There's no question about that, to be fair.
No, absolutely.
But no, there's been moments in the last couple of races where, like, McLaren have shown the pace in, say, the practice and then, you know, just lost it in the race, really, haven't they? And it's been theirs to lose. That's how they've dropped out of the whole title race, and now it's a two-horser.
Well, Jensen's vented his spleen. I read on the Sky website that he's vocally saying he's very pissed off with the inconsistencies that the car's had this year. He feels like, you know, they've got it right. He's been on the sweet spot, and then for no apparent reason, the sweet spot's just disappeared. It's moved away to somewhere else, and it's not been the tyres. It's been mechanical more than rubber based.
Yeah, we know that Jensen's really good with his tyres. So if anyone can get the best out of them when the car's performing, it's going to be Jensen.
Mm.
So it's definitely got to be the car. And they seem to have had that middle bit of the season when they did really well, when him and Lewis were winning, was it three or four races in a row?
Yeah, they traded in the wind
moment,
there, weren't
it? It's just terrible. I mean, albeit, okay, subject to Lewis's win, but...
Well, they started, though, didn't they? I mean, Jensen pulled out the first one at Australia.
Yeah.
Then Hamilton had it at Canada. Then Hamilton again at Hungary, Button at Belgium, Hamilton at Italy. That's the ping pong that you were talking about. Well, but since Monza, there's been absolutely nothing really to show.
Even Singapore, though, it was sort of, you know, set to win it, and then the car problem.
Yeah.
Well, same in Abu Dhabi. Dhabi as well.
Yeah.
You know, he would have won that race. No question.
I was saying before that race, you know, he was blatantly going to win it. I'm glad I was wrong in a way, but. It was no good for his title chances, but it did make the race itself more exciting.
Mm. Now, it's interesting that Whitmarsh has been saying or speculating that Hamilton's unhappy at the fact that he's left and it's a jumped move that he shouldn't have made and he regrets it now he's done it. But based on the reliability of car in the last six races, probably, or five races, you've really got to question that. I mean, the Mercedes has... it's not challenging properly, perhaps, but it's not lack reliability this year, is it?
No, the problems have been mainly Schumacher this year with that Mercedes, even though there's been races where it's been in contention, it's even won.
Mm.
I feel that it hasn't had that many problems, though.
There
haven't been that many developments to the car, because they've basically just gone, well, we're not going to bother with this. We're going to start working on next season's.
Yeah. Mm.
Which a lot of teams have done.
I think that's what even McLaren are doing now. They've been doing that for the last couple of races. They've said,
this season could have been sponsored by SafeStar, because it's been all about windows this year. And I feel that Red Bull has this ability, the dev teams have this ability to get the car into a position where it's in the optimum zone, and it's easy to maintain that optimum zone.
Mm.
And then it is for McLaren. It's a finer degree of...
Well, you still have the wider range of cars, you know, actually competing, you know, being there with the speed for the wins. It's just whether they've, you know, lost it on tyres or reliability.
You just don't know, do you? I mean, like with McLaren being one of two teams to go with the non-step nose design. Now, that could compromise them in all number of ways. Stiffness of wishbones, torsion bars, anti-roll. So they may be running a harder car, which makes it harder relative to the other teams, which for whatever reason, you just don't know. I mean, every team is going to come.
But that does set them up nicely for next
They're all within a fairly close margin, even with all the potential for different setups. But even with that, Hamilton's driving style seems to be able to get the car to its optimum more quickly than Jensen. Jensen's a smoother driver, and that's probably his problem. It has been his problem, because he can't get the tyres warm and keep them warm.
Mm.
That's where he suffered.
I mean, there's a question from Batwitch in the chat room questioning whether the smaller teams should be allowed to enter in F1. I mean, we've seen Marussia come in the last 2 years. You've seen the Cosworth is struggling quite significantly. Marussia's making good gains this year, has to be said. They've had some good finishes. Was it Korea or India where they got 14th?
12, yeah, 14th, and it's left them out of the non-scoring teams. It's left them the best of that sort of last three, hasn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, I think that's a very interesting question, though. But I think if you started going down that route, no one would ever actually get in amongst the top teams, and it would take something away from the sport. I think what really needs to happen is there does need to be something there, though, and maybe the performance each year needs to be monitored to make sure they're actually making progress before they actually start to, you know, be allowed, so they are coming up the field, a bit like Mercedes.
Well, I think there's a certain analogy here. If you look at cricket, you know, there's a question whether Bangladesh should be allowed to be a test side at cricket. But the argument is, well, how are they ever going to be a test side unless they're playing test cricket and playing those higher sides? Even if they're getting the arses kicked, they've got to go out and they've got to compete and they've got to benchmark themselves against those.
Yeah.
And Batwinch has come back with another point in the chat room here. What about the costs going up? Would that keep the smaller teams out? Don't forget, 2014 is a capped season, is it not?
Yeah,
well, we've had that to a certain extent anyway for a couple of years. That was one of the things that Max Mosley
was
really strong about imposing.
Well, no, you've seen caps on server time use, you've seen caps on wind tunnel use and that kind of thing.
Yeah, and in the development gearboxes as well. And the idea of that was to cap the cost.
Yes, no. But what I'm talking about is, at the moment, you look at Red Bull and McLaren, they've got a $250 million budget for running their teams. Well, Marussia are running on a $65 million budget. And as far as I'm aware, in 2014, there will be a cap. And that is it. The total budget cap will come in. You cannot run your team for more than $80 million or whatever it is.
That's good. Because all the big teams are the best at loopholing.
Yeah. Yeah,
Red Bull do it. I mean, in their Milton Keynes complex, it's not just one building. They have Red Bull, you know, Racing Technologies, which is just licensing tech, but that's just free budget. They just do what they want.
Mm.
So it's all manner of development. Same with McLaren. McLaren have McLaren Technologies, Applied Technologies, which...
there's a stone wall between those, though, Chris.
There's got to be some crossover in IP. There has to be.
IP, and
Williams does all their KERS development. Williams is doing quite well. I mean, they have all their gear in the Porsche.
I mean, McLaren are even going into providing for the Formula E, aren't they, as well? The sort of electronics and things like that for that. Yeah, so that'll be similar spec to what they're going to be having to use in F1.
Mm. But an important point to make is that at the moment, Marussia is still 10th in the constructors, so they will be the last team to get a big wadge of money from the FIA in the season, should they finish 10th.
There ought to be a reverse for that, shouldn't there? Like, if you finish 10th, you get the bigger quantity of money. If you finish first, you get the smallest quantity of money.
Like the team can be more healthy. Yeah. Fantastic.
That's like the way it works in American sports with the draft, where the teams that finish the lowest get the first call on the draft.
That's right.
Or we could just ballast the cars down. That'd be fun.
But then we end up with BTCC and...
it's ballast.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong with British Touring Car Championship, mate. Don't you dare.
Well, given... Okay. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
It's a different animal, though, isn't it?
Or should we just do what they do with the grids and just fastest poles and fastest qualifiers, stick them at the back and have them fight through? Because
there would be no incentive there to be on pole, would there?
Yeah, you've still got to have the incentive to win. Otherwise, you will have just, you know, teams going for the consistent results, but maybe not going for the win.
Especially with the limited number of gearboxes and engines, they're just not going to push it, are they?
Ah, but then what we can have is Bernie Ecclestone standing at the side of the track with sprinklers.
Yeah, because Bernie would do that.
Yeah.
Mm.
No, so what we need to do is turn it into the F1 Race Stars racing game, the Mario Kart style.
I say we play it like Monopoly. We just get up to turn one and you go straight to the pits, no stopping, no collecting $200. as it stands at the moment, Constructors' Championship, Red Bull Racing, 422 points, Ferrari, 340 points, and McLaren, 318 points. It is a battle for second in Constructors by a long way, isn't it?
Yeah, Red Bull nearly won it at the last race.
Lotus Renault, 288. Not bad.
Yeah, they would have done if Mark Webber hadn't gone out.
Ferrari are 80 points shy at the moment, so you can't see them making 80 points upon them at all. Good as the finish of the season's been for Felipe. And in the Drivers' Championship, you've got Vettel at 255, only 10 points difference there between him and Alonso at 245.
Yeah,
Raikkonen in a cheeky 198.
I think it'd need a non-finish for it to be decided this weekend, which is good.
Yeah, I mean, it's still going to go to... It's not. It's going to go to the wire, I think, isn't it?
Yeah.
Failing us a Vettel win and a Alonso 0 points, then there's no...
Alonso.
Exactly. An Alonso failure. I was going to say failure. A Alonso 0.
Mm. Yeah, I mean... Fernando
failure.
Said in the last day or so that he feels that the title's in Vettel's hands.
Oh, blimey. That's not good, is it? He's still got 10 points. He can still get there.
Oh, yeah, I know. But he does give him the advantage.
But he had been phenomenal in the races. You know, he's not done so well in qualifying, but in the races, he's really pulled it back up, hasn't he?
Alonso. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Who are we going to select and pay a few quid to take Vettel out of corner one? Got to be Grosjean.
Maldonado.
No one's going to come looking, investigating that, are they? If you're going to hire a hitman, you'd hire Grosjean. Because Grosjean takes him out of T1, everyone's going to go, well, saw it coming. We did warn you.
Or Kimi, because he just won't give it.
It's about the only thing that's going to stop Vettel, I think. I just felt after Abu Dhabi, when he started from the pit lane, he still finished on the podium. I thought, that's it. There's nothing Alonso can do now.
No, it was pretty tasty.
Ferrari better have a pretty major change here, or they're screwed.
Mm. Short of a DNF from Vettel, then it's
well, it's doable though.
Yeah, I mean, we've had the
it's doable.
The recurring alternator problem. What was it, Singapore, where that happened again after happening at Valencia?
That's a good point. Is he on a crap out gearbox potential? When was his last gearbox?
I think most of them are on their last engine, last gearbox.
Yeah, they'll be on the last ones going into the last two races, surely.
Yeah, I mean, they said that Brazil is always going to be, they will be the last, they won't use a new engine for Brazil because it's quite an easy track on the engines and the gearbox. They said Abu Dhabi was really, for most of them, it was the last time that they actually changed them. And they may use an older one for Brazil, but not likely that they will save an engine for the last race.
So, looking ahead, we've got the very first race, the Grand Prix of the Americas. Austin is the town in Texas, and what a racetrack they seem to have produced.
Yeah, it looks awesome.
One of the things that, have any of you guys seen Laguna Seca Raceway? When I saw that turn one, the first place I thought of was Laguna Seca, because having raced around there on a couple of simulators, Laguna Seca is really brutal because the elevation change really affects braking. You know, your car's very light on its feet to start with, and you start putting the brakes on at the wrong position, and it's almost like you're spinning on sheer ice at some issues, going, you know, when you lose that weight at the top of turns, going down into descents and so on.
Yeah. I mean, especially with all the runoff area that are sort of more tarmac-y on this. Like, usually that's a bad thing on a circuit, say like Abu Dhabi, where it's more flat. But with this, with the changes in elevation, it could still throw something else in there, you know.
Yeah,
you don't really get it at even at Spa, because Spa's a long elevation change up into turns that continue in the turns on the flat or on the elevation. With this one, you're talking about a change where you're going up, and then from the brake you're applying power as you're coming downhill. Mm-hmm. And if you're not careful, that's going to lose a lot of traction against it. And some of the technical areas later on, particularly, I was looking at, is it T10, T11? Mm-hmm. That area there, T10, T11, T12. You've got a very big hard brake there for a turn before you then start a real hard descent. And certainly places like Laguna Seca, that's where you start losing traction very easily. I've got a picture that I've thrown up here on the video that just shows the elevation change on the track. And the interesting conversation piece has got to be turn one.
Yeah.
I mean, that
fantastic little run-up. I mean, the last track that I can remember that we've seen that sort of run-up was like the A1 ring in Austria.
Yes.
Well, Indianapolis had something similar like that coming around the start to the last.
Well, only because it was an oval, track. Though. Only really yeah. because it was an oval, though.
Yeah.
But no, this had that elevation change and then a sort of hard, you know, a hard turn, whether it be almost 90, isn't it?
Yeah, it wasn't.
It's coming back on itself. I mean, it's probably more like a 120 or something.
Yeah.
Here's Marussia's picture that they tweeted out earlier today on the track walk. And that really kind of, you know, that is a track yump. That is a long, long climb up there to that turn. And then it pitches round very quickly and goes down the other side.
Quite a long flat area as well, really, isn't it? You can see where it's hill, and then it's quite a change between being hill and flat as well.
Well, you look at that picture, if you look at the track down where the pits are, you're effectively level with the top of the grandstand. So that's 60 to 100 feet up in a very short space of time. And we've always been questioning whether Formula One's got a turn one problem. It's going to be interesting to find that out this week.
There's going to be a few flying off at that first corner.
The only place I can anything there's anything like this is Brands Hatch, which has that long straight as you go up the hill to the hairpin at the top of the hill and then come back down again.
Yeah. You'd hardly design it as a hill, though, would you? It's hardly comparable in the elevation change of that track.
That looks pretty awesome, that.
Well, do you remember the Red Bull commercial when they made that there to launch it, and they had David Coulthard running around in the Red Bull car? He went to the top of that hill and rolled down an F1 tyre. And it was... that was... That thing just... He said, just to try and demonstrate the elevation change. And he was chasing after it.
That was when it was still...
It was still dirt, yeah.
Yeah.
That was last year. So they've laid this track down pretty quickly. It's fresh tarmac almost, probably, certainly. So they're going to have... Like you said, the tyre usage is going to be quite critical. Any thoughts on T1, Chris?
Everyone is, well, they've all raced in the sims, so they'll all be fairly handy on around it. But I think some people are still going to go in too cautiously. So we could be having some interesting overtakes.
Interesting. Yeah, I would have said they might overgun it into it.
Is this the first race on this track as well?
Yeah, I don't think there's anything to...
Well, I'm sure by the race there'll be GP2 beforehand, won't there?
There'll be some GP2 spare parts at that turn, yeah.
Yeah, well, they're not running GP2 this weekend.
No, aren't they?
Oh, aren't they? Oh, right, okay.
The season's all finished, so it will be
just F1. All right,
there will be a support race of some kind, I'd imagine. But
so it's going to be Lockup City around there.
Oh, you've got to watch. Wow. You've got to watch P1, haven't you? God, yeah. Blimey!
Yeah. Unfortunately, it's all on at sociable times.
Yeah, it's Americans. Like 3 p.m. 3 p.m. UK time. So
well, apart from the fact I'll be in the middle of the Mac show, yes.
That's what the Sky Plus box is for, mate.
It doesn't work at the minute.
Other PVRs are available.
Have it on your tablet in front of you while you're doing.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I mean, just in the middle of the show, you're going, oh.
Yeah, that's what I need, is the bandwidth being sapped even more.
Yeah, it'd be fine. It will possibly go wrong.
We'll see. We'll see.
No, I look forward to it. Even practice should be interesting on this one, I think.
It should be.
Less so.
It'll be interesting what they go out with in terms of sensors and wing setups and things like that, because where they're trying to get that extra downforce, I would have thought that with that elevation change, you're going to be pushing into the hill an awful lot when you get to the top, and then that change in downforce at the top is going to be quite interesting. It's going to favour, you know, if you talk about the double or the double DRS effect of the Red Bulls, when they go through there, that's going to be interesting to see what their grip's going to be like.
Also, go on, Tony.
Sorry, I did find it quite fun to drive on the F1 2012 game.
Right. To be honest.
Yeah, after a few laps of getting used to it, I found it flowed quite well for most of it, and it was fun to drive. So I think it will be popular with the drivers, but they might take some getting used to.
Just to flip back, I've been trying to find on Sky Sports F1's F1 show at the beginning of the year. Kravitz had a plan which they brought up on screen, which showed how the engines were scheduled out for all the races of the season. But on the F1 Fanatic forum, I saw a comment thread, and one person said in there, well, you've got 16 engines to play with, but whoever's in the car that has to get the ninth engine is the person who's going to incur the penalty. So by that extension, are 8 engines allocated and they cannot be shared amongst the team, or do the team just get 16 engines? So Alonso could perhaps take the newer of the two engines for that weekend, and
I'm sure it's 8.
Massa would take the Duff engine, you know, and
I would
just
have
run
thought
it on
driver allocation. Yeah.
It'll be 8 per car.
Haven't read the regs.
No, interesting. Did you see Anthony Davidson's appraisal of the lap that what's his face did?
The display lap.
Yeah, there was a guy, I can't remember the name of the bloody driver.
Was it one of the Andretti, wasn't it?
No. There was one of the F1 drivers. He's the only F1 driver that's been around it.
Oh, the Ambrosia.
Ambrosia. He went around the Ambrosia lap and he took it through. And one of the interesting sections was the kind of the S's that came through from turn 3 through to turn 8. I'm just trying to see if I can zoom in on that bit.
Yeah, he described it as being a very precise section of the track, didn't he? But, and it reminded me immediately of Suzuka.
Yeah,
when I saw it.
Hugely technical. And it was interesting through as he came through from 3, 4, 5, and then from 6, 7, and 8, particularly when he came through 7, he was going through in the middle of the track because he hadn't worked out where he was supposed to be for the next turn. And he was saying that's going to be a huge technical element and a big opportunity for passing. Which, in terms of track design, we've not seen any real opportunities for depassing being built into them. So a new track is mouthwatering, surely.
Yeah. I've found on Viva F1, by the way, vivaf1.com, they do have engine stats. If you go to their reliability tab, and then they've got an engine cycle tab, and it shows you all the different engines they've gone through. Not everyone is on their 8th engine.
Who's not, then?
This data seems incomplete. So, but yeah, sorry about that. I should have read.
Still on
should have read faster. Interesting. Some people may have stuck with the 7th engine. I think this only shows when. Yes, this only shows when they get a new engine in the car. So some people are still running their 7th engine. So we'll be switching to their 8th new for the USA. But all of the major teams are already on their 8th engine.
Right, so we could be getting some. Well, you haven't had a lot of engine crap outs this year. It's all been gearbox.
Sauber aren't on 8th engine yet.
Are any of the engines? Are any of the teams used up on gearbox?
Oh, That's a good point. Well, it doesn't matter, does it? Because they just stick a new one in and they get a 5-place grid penalty.
No, but what I'm saying is, what happens if you're on your last gearbox, which you feasibly could be this race, and it craps out? Do you take a 5-grid penalty, or is that you out of the championship next week?
No, it's 5-place grid penalty at Brazil.
Yeah, but if you've only got an allocation of a set number of gearboxes...
No, you can use more, but you no, just there, take there a grid place penalty.
Yeah, there's no limit on gearboxes. I don't think it's any engines.
Mm. Right.
Oh, I thought it was gearboxes as well.
I thought it was as well, I have to say.
Hmm. There's certain points where you can't change a gearbox within a weekend, isn't it? Like after
Parc Fermé.
Yeah. Or after the start of qualifying, effectively.
I'm having a look on Wikipedia.
Yeah, as I understand it, and I'm usually wrong, but I don't think they have a limit on gearboxes. They just have the penalty. So perhaps it would work better if there was a defined number of gearboxes, but no penalty for swapping.
When you hear about those swapping penalties, it's usually between qualifying and race, isn't it?
Mm. Interesting stat, though. Renault engine is the most unreliable for the majors. I mean, Cosworth's had the most failures.
Do you mean the most DNF or the actual?
Well, Renault's had 4 failures in 18 races.
Oh, right.
8 cars, 4 failures. Mercedes, 6 cars, no failures. Ferrari, 6 cars, no failures. Cosworth, 4 cars and 3 failures. But never mind.
The technical, here we go. Engines, each car is allowed 8 engines to be used as they say fit for the season. Should they need a further engine, they'll have to contend with the demotion of 10 places from their qualifying position at the next race in which they then use it. Gearboxes, each driver must use the same gearbox for 5 consecutive races. Should they then need an additional gearbox, they'll be hit with a 5-grid penalty. So there's no limitation on the number of gearboxes.
Wow. 5 Grand Prix, that's a long way.
You've got to use it for 5 consecutive Grand Prix.
No new engines were used at Monaco, Hungary or Singapore. Monaco and Singapore, you can get that because they're not really
full throttle. Yeah, exactly.
The slower street tracks, particularly in the case of Singapore and Monaco.
And Vettel went onto his 8th engine 1 race earlier than Webber. So Vettel's running with the older equipment. So that could be interesting.
Oh, I see. Yes, better what India and Webber.
Yeah. If you want to see this for yourself, by the way, it's vivaf1.com/reliability.php. It's a great law.
It is, isn't it?
Cool. Goldmine of info.
Excellent.
Yeah, we're all just going to sit here now and read it. yeah, worth a check out if you like the stats.
Any magic moments then from the last few races that you fancy going through? Anything that stick? I mean, don't go looking back at your notes. There's got to, if it's a magic moment, it's got to stick out, surely.
Starting from the pit lane.
The what? Sorry.
Vettel starting from the pit lane. Sorry,
couldn't have happened to a nicer bloke.
I thought he was telling that right after Hamilton and Perez, all those deals had been done. There was one of the races where Perez actually passed Hamilton on track. I think it was Japan. Yeah, that was a nice little moment, but he's gone down in form since, sadly.
Yes. Lucky. Sarah?
There's 2 things for me, and neither of them are mainstream race things, but I thought they're both good. Was Hamilton's steering wheel change at India.
Mm. Yeah.
And also at the last race. I know what I'm doing!
Yes.
That was classic. Yeah.
I've got to say, I love Rosberg. Rosberg and Carter Kane. It's the best spectacular crash of the year. There's no question of it.
He's driving the wheels off it. I'll give you that.
Exactly. And the thing that got me about this is everyone's given crap to Grosjean about his little shunts and stuff like that. But he's always been in the thick of traffic. He's always been jockeying for position. There's always been cars moving around him. And if he's got lost and he's under par in his estimations of where he shouldn't be on the track, then that's fair enough. This was wide open, with a back marker that should have let him past, and he's gone right up his arse and flown right over the top of him. And that was just an inexcusable crash, and no one said boo to a goose. And I loved the bit about whoever it was that was braking in front of Vettel on the safety car, and Vettel losing his rag and shouting, "He keeps braking, you keep stopping telling him."
That was Webber. No. It was the Toro Rosso, wasn't it?
Yeah. Someone pissing Vettel off. Always a winner. Car, yeah. Always a
but
winner.
In terms of shunts like that, there was also Shuey's accident where he got done for that accident.
Singapore, that was, wasn't it?
Yeah, where he smashed into the back of the car, didn't he? Because the other one slowed down or something. I can't remember exactly what it was. But
he braked far too late.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was a combination of factors, but he was more in the wrong there.
Mm.
Can they strap down the engines and rebuild them, says Batwinch. Bookery says he thinks they can rebuild the main engine parts, but they can't be changed for fresh. I've seen the engines.
I was going to say, they've got seals on, FIA seals on them. I've actually seen them. So.
I saw the Cosworth engine at Marussia this year when I was there, and they've got and they've got little leaded tamper tags all over them, and also the gearboxes have got tamper tags. And I did wind them up a little bit because I went down and I said, what's this attached to the gearbox, and held my hand up like that? They weren't happy. Yeah.
Trying to give it a little...
I didn't touch it. I'm joking.
Little tug.
For God's sake, calm down. And apparently Sack says, Kimmy had T-shirts made up for the whole team saying, I know what I'm doing.
If you retweet the tweet they put out, then I'm hoping they're going to make them available for sale because I'll wear one.
Yeah, it was black and gold as well, which was very good.
Yeah.
Cool.
One of the nicest F1 factoids I picked up this year is that the fuel tanks aren't solid, and when they take them out of the car,
no, they're bags.
Put them back in, they compress them right down, and they have to squeeze them through a tiny hole, and they're like bags, and they expand and fill up.
Yeah,
quite clever. Especially with baffles and things inside.
And they basically squeeze them through the same nozzle they use to refuel.
Obviously, they could get enough enough fuel out for Vettel's quali.
Last week's F1 show, I had an article about that problem with the Red Bull, and they've got this. It was quite a nice little 3D diagram they brought up in virtual reality, but I understand how it works now. The fact that they can make that all work, I'm amazed that they can even gather a litre from them at all. It's everything about F1's just crazy complicated, but you just think, hey, it's just a fuel tank, stick a pipe in, you know.
Well, there's an F1 tub that you would have where the driver fits. And the if you look behind the driver's cockpit there, you've got the kind of an A-frame that goes behind their head. That's where the fuel tank sits.
Mm.
And the gap is on the underside there, and it goes up and it holds 125 litres of fuel or whatever it is.
And it must be super strong to be safe as well.
Well, it's a rubber bag. And speaking to
with Kevlar, isn't it?
Yeah, but speaking to the technicians at Marussia, you know, what the hell's that like? And he said, it's trying to fit a melon through a lemon. That was it. That was the way they described it. It's like trying to fit a melon through a lemon.
Mm.
And it is. I mean, it's a huge thing. Absolutely huge. Just fills the entire void when it's got fuel in it.
We need to go on a school trip to the Marussia HQ so we can see him doing it.
That's
I'll try and organise it.
There can't be much of a space in there for it even to expand into when it's full, but
no, I just
obviously being a bag, it's a bit more flexibility with that.
See if we can find another picture, but I just picked the first tub that I could find on Google Images. But there's another picture, and where the engine air inlet there is above the driver's head, that's the only bit then that's not fuel cell. And the fuel cell sits behind and underneath the driver, and it's filled from the bottom, or it's pushed through from the bottom, filled, and then capped off.
Well, don't forget also as well, there's a video which Sauber puts up earlier on their YouTube channel, which is a cross section of their car.
Yeah, flies down the middle, isn't it?
She's absolutely fascinating, and they even get I think they get Sergio to sit in it.
Did you see?
He's just kind of perched there on one butt cheek, but it's fascinating.
Well, there was a similar thing where Mercedes did it, where they basically took apart one of their F1 cars and suspended it all in one of the rooms.
I was just about to say, did you see that today?
Yeah, it's like all the parts just suspended on fishing wire, and you know,
yeah, I'm trying to find the picture.
Sort of exploded.
Keep talking while I find it.
It's mind-boggling the number of the parts. You know, even with a quite in-depth knowledge, you wouldn't think it's...
And it's not all the parts. I mean, it's crazy. Like, there's a million parts that have got to be seen on that thing.
Mm-mm. But yeah, it was...
Oh, I can't find it now. It was earlier this morning. Darren Griffin tweeted a picture of it out.
Go on, Tony.
Go ahead. Right.
Well, what's been puzzling me this year is the amount of brake dust that's been coming off brake calipers as people are going into braking. So it seems, and we've seen a few failures as well. That's a bit concerning, but there shouldn't be that much dust, should there, off these discs? I mean, it's not happened before.
But I think what is that they're trying the brakes more and more. They, you know, in order to be able to get better speed and through the corners, they want to be able to have the demands to be able to brake later and later, which is going to be heavier on the brakes.
They're just compromising the cooling.
Yeah,
they're just taking it that much further to the limit.
Yeah, absolutely.
And let's not forget, it's not exactly a magic moment, but let's not forget Petrov's wing disappearance. His ultra DRS, as I've coined it.
There's a picture of the F1 car suspended in exploded views.
Something else, that, isn't it?
Lots and lots of wires holding it up. But, I mean, I can't believe that's all the parts anyway. It's separated. They've torn the engine down as well. And one of the things that Marussia were really twitchy about was having cameras out while the engines were there. As soon as the engines came out, all the cameras had to go away. But the rest of it, they didn't give a toss about what you filmed. You look at whatever you like. Gearboxes a lot, but as soon as the engines came out and trolleys, all phones away.
So in a way, the part they don't actually build, the part that comes from
Cosworth, yeah.
Interesting.
This podcast and all the others is brought to you by UK2.net. It's superb. They've got £1 domains at the moment for .co.uk. Get yourself down there. There's 2,000 they've released at the start of this week. So go and buy a .co.uk domain and you get it for a quid. Use the offer code and you get 20% off it. So it's only going to cost you 80p. You can't believe it, can you? Neither can I. Go down there. Go to our website first, britishtechnetwork.com. Use the click through. Use the offer code. Get yourself a domain name. And cash in. There's 2,000 released at the start of this week, and I think they're saying that there might be about 1,000 next week, but then that'll be the end of the offer. No more than that. So get registering, people. Love them to bits. They support us, so please support them. Thank you.
I was pricing up some VPSs as well, and I went to compare with them. They are still bang on competitive on VPSs as well.
And you still get your first month free.
Yeah. And they've got a really nice calculator as well. You can work it out and it gives you dynamic pricing. It's really, really cool.
That's right. Little sliders and stuff. Well done.
Yeah.
Where can we get a hold of you, Mr. Blunt?
At tone_720 on Twitter. That's the gateway to everywhere else.
Good, man.
And also on the media show.
Of course, the media show on Sundays with Russ Clewitt. We're up for an award for that. I forgot to do the thing as well earlier on. European Podcast Awards. Go and vote for us, please, please, please. Chris, where are you, mate?
At Christopher W on the Twitters.
Jolly good, mate. And last but by no means least, Sarah Gray.
Yes, I'm on the Twitters at Sarah Jane UK.
Excellent. I'm Ewan Rankin on Twitter, at Ewan Rankin. And we'll be doing Mac Show and Photo Show tomorrow. And we're going to try and have an assembly tomorrow, next week, maybe Thursday night after the big show again, to do the Austin Grand Prix and see if we can drag Mr. Neighbour back into the fold as well as.
That'd be good.
See you there. Have a good week. Thanks for listening.